brothers and sisters. Normally, as you know, most Thursday nights are given over to exposition by our brethren from time to time in the study of different books of the Bible. And these are necessary for our spiritual growth. But this evening, we're going to be speaking on a little easier level, a more relaxed level maybe, and because you've already heard the subject that's going to be discussed this evening. And the reason I came to deciding to do this, consideration of the years that I spent into in the truth, came about by I was going through, as most of you know, we have one or two very nice Bibles, part of our collection, family collection. And we have one family Bible that belonged to some of the people who lived in the Fort Victoria. And I was going through this to make sure that it hadn't been damaged over different visits of people. And I came across a sheet of paper, and on it was a list of the baptisms of all the brothers and sisters in the Victoria Ecclesia. Her sister Di Stodell, I believe, did it. So I looking down to see when I was baptized, and I suddenly realized that as of June of this year, it was 65 years I'd been in the truth. It was a bit of a shock to me in more ways than one. And the realization that so many years have passed by, and having looked back on those years quickly, I thought, well, I don't know whether I've done justice to my high calling or not, but I will consider the years and share them with you this evening, and maybe in some lighter way, in a way of a talk this evening, and we can help each other, and especially to the young ones. So at that time, and all through my years, I've always bent the knee to the throne on high to thank God for every day that I live, because I've not always walked in the ways of God, and I know that I've been guilty of many things, and I lean heavily upon his mercy, and especially in giving me so many years to live. So we thank God for this. Now, there is a story told of a man who was taken a long journey, and he had one more bridge to pass over. And having crossed over that bridge before he reached his final destination, he paused for a while and he looked back. And when he looked back, he saw that the bridge that he had crossed over was beginning to collapse, that it wasn't what it had been. And so he stood there contemplating what he should do. He thought, well, I'm not going to come this way again, so we'll leave it for the next person to build it, and we'll carry on. But then as he stood back and he looked back, he realized that some of the people that he loved and who walked with him, they would be coming this way, and they would have to either turn back or take another direction or spend the time building the bridge. So this is the reason for my talk this evening, because having reached this stage in my life, I want to build some bridges if I can, for especially the young ones and for the brothers and sisters, so that your journey will maybe a little easier, and that you can reach the destination to enter into the gates of the kingdom. And so at this stage of my life, I'm able to look back, and I feel somewhat like David of old. And as our brother read that psalm this evening, he there contemplated, David looked back, and he observed all the movements of his life, and knew that God had been with him in good times and in bad times. There's a couple of places in the psalm that I want you to turn to, because this will give a portrait of the life that I have lived. So if you go to Psalm 37 first, and at we'll read at verse 22, if you read along with me on this, as I say, we feel like David at this particular time, when he said in Psalm 37 and at verse 23, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not utterly be cast down. for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. I have been young, and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. I want to go to the other one that was read this evening, and just take a couple of verses out of that to give emphasis to what I'm saying at this time. And you remember that David at that particular time wrote for the benefit of the others how his trust had been in God, and he never been put to confusion or shame. And he continues in that way, going back to his birth from his mother's womb, and how that God had watched over him, and how wonderful I am as a wonder unto many, but thou art my strength. So what he's saying is that whatever he had done in his life, when he walked in the ways of God, it was not of his own strength, but it was of God. God, he was a wonder unto many in the ways that he walked before his God, because God was his strong refuge. God was with him. God supported him. God took him carefully. God took him out of dangerous moments to see that he would be safely taken to God's kingdom. So he said this in verse 17, O God, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works. Now also, and you can see David at the close of his life, now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength or thine arm unto this generation, and thy power to everyone that is to come. So that is my prayer and desire this evening, that whilst I am old, I am gray-headed, but I pray to God that he will give me the strength to continue on, so that in some small way I can help the generation, my generation and the younger generations that come along, to my grandchildren and to my families, to show to them that if they remain faithful to God, God will see them safely through their lives and bring them into his kingdom, which is God's desire to preserve the faithful ones. So that is the expression by David, which voices my situation at this time, being old, yet I pray to God that he will give me a few more years, and that by his power I may be able to help others. I discovered in the reading of that sheet from the old Bible, I was baptized into the name of Jesus Christ on June the 29th, 1944. So that we haven't reached the 65 yet, but pretty close to it. And so we have been in the truth, and I like that term, in the truth, for all those number of years. I was baptized in Rugby, the city in the middle of England. And at that particular time, I was baptized with, on the same evening as Brother Alan Ormrod. We were baptized together. We, Brother Ormrod, as some of you may know, they lived up in Lancashire, up in the country where things were changing there. The factories and that were going over to automation, all the cotton mills and all that. And his father found it difficult to adjust to the automation of these machines. They came down to Rugby. We became very good friends, and we studied the scriptures together, and we got baptized together. The preparation for this baptism was given to us by our youth leader. This is where the youth leaders come in. And so what in my talk this evening, I'm going to reach out and touch different segments of our ecclesia to show them, to encourage them to be more fervent in the role which they're playing. So this youth leader of ours, who was very dedicated to his work, he gave us instructions to be baptized. But what I want to emphasize at this time is, and that is in our bridge building, especially for the youth leaders and for elders and everybody, that their conversion doesn't come at baptism. Our change or desire for baptism doesn't come maybe a few months before baptism. Our knowledge of our responsibilities does not come almost instant before we apply for baptism. It's an ongoing thing from the time that we're a child. And I want to emphasize this to the parents and everyone this evening, because It's an ongoing thing. Remember what the proverb says, that you should train a child in the way that he should go, and when he is older, he will not depart from it. This, I believe, is essential. This preparation for baptism begins when a child recognizes the movements and the sayings of a child. This is so critical, I feel, in the consideration of our responsibility within the ecclesia. We have this power to influence our child at this time. It's no good expecting our children, regardless of our attitude of life, expecting our children reaching a certain age and then being encouraged to be baptism, because it's going to be difficult for them, maybe difficult for them. It comes from the preparation step by step through their early times. We have to remember that David of old, when he was a shepherd boy in the Judean hills, his crown was already being forged by God for the time that he would put on that crown. He didn't suddenly become standing in a situation to become a king. There had been a development. There had been a development. And the reason I talk about this is because when I was baptized into the truth, it wasn't a sudden and an emotional thing. It was the result of teachings and trainings and observation of my parents and our brethren and sisters that made me realize the importance of living this type of life. And so I was very fortunate in being blessed in such a home where I had parents whose lives had been designed and shaped on the anvil of the holy oracles of God. And what impressed me with them, apart from the fact that my father was quite a student of the Bible, and likewise my mother, was that they lived their faith. And this as a child was very important and very a powerful influence upon my life. Because though my father was a speaker, that's not what I remember. What I remember is attitude in the home, and his work for the truth, and his attitude towards his neighbors. That was the influence. So it became a living faith as I saw him. And it's like the old English saying, actions speak louder than words. So this is a warning, this observation of my life, a warning to us all, parents, relatives, and elders, that you can never fool a child. You want to remember this. Children, we've been around to some of our family. And they have two little boys. One's 18 years old. It wouldn't be very young. 18 months old, and one's two years. And we recognize that they pick up every little thing that you're doing and saying, and they remember it. The next time you go around, they will remember it and remind you of it. So we have to be very careful, because we are always under the microscope of these little children's minds. And so you brothers and sisters, especially the elders, when these young people walk amongst you in the ecclesia, they are watching you. And if you step out of line, then they remember that and notice it maybe more than other things. And it will influence their future desire and preparation for baptism. This is very critical that we should remember this. And we have seen this in time past. We have experienced ecclesias where the youth had not the desire to cross over that bridge because they don't like that bridge. It looks faulty to them. It looks phony. And so they will not cross over it. And we have seen so many tragedies in our lifetime in the truth, where young people have fallen away, not because they don't know the knowledge. And I have walked from some of my Sunday school days. I have mixed some of my Sunday school friends and not baptized to this day. They had a greater knowledge than I did at the age of 17, 18. They could run circles around me when it came to quotations and speaking on certain subjects. But they never came to the waters of baptism and discussing with them it because of the impression they got from their time within the ecclesia. And so it is that leading up to the time of the baptism, I just want to do a little review of the few years before the time that I stepped into the waters of baptism. Now, most of my senior school days, they were carried out, like some of us here have come from England, most of those days were belonged to the years in the middle of World War II, from 1939, as most of you know, to 1946. There was a war raging on many fronts. There was the European War, there was the Japanese War, as we know. And my senior school days were in that period of around 1942-43, the senior days. And so it was very difficult in more ways than one. We didn't have the benefits that young people have today as far as school concerned. One thing was that all the professional teachers were now fighting on the front line in Europe or in Italy or places like that. And so they enlisted retired teachers. And these retired teachers didn't want to teach the like of me, and so they did nothing else but babysit. Now, with all this going on, there was a restriction. We were never given homework because lights were supposed to be out in your homes at night time. You're supposed to go to bed early in case there was an air raid at night, and you'd have to spend the evening down in the air raid shelters. Once and twice a week, we as a class school had to go into the farmers' fields from 2 o'clock till 4 o'clock and pick potatoes. And the reason for this was what they call the national war effort. And they used us young guys to go into these fields, pick potatoes, because there wasn't the labor on the farms. And so this is where we spent 2 afternoons a week. And we, not being very good boys at that time, we would hope, I was going to say pray, but we never resorted to that. We would hope that the Germans would come over, because when they came over and the siren sounded and we saw the Luftwaffe planes coming over, we had instruction to go and hide in the ditches. So we didn't mind that because we were getting out of school, we're getting away from the farmer doing his work for him, and we sat in the ditches and singing all the songs that boys sing at that particular age. So it didn't make for a good education. And so I often think of the Apostle Paul's words. He says, though he was on a different level than me as far as education, he said, I don't come in the power of the word, but in the power, I don't come in the excellency of speech, but I become in the power of the word. And so that's what you have standing before you this time. And my excuse is that I never had a very good school education, because the school education was at a low ebb. And so not being a student as well, my interest at school was either playing on the rugby and football field, or we had a history teacher who flew planes in the First War, and he would, under a little encouragement from his boys, he would voice the story of Oliver Cromwell and all those other part of our history which we'd done. And someone would be planned in the class to ask him at a given time when things were getting heavy, what did you do in the First War, Mr. Brooks? And he would, for the next three quarters of an hour, tell us all about how he flew planes in the First War. And I think he shot down every German plane there was by the time he told the story a few times. Nevertheless, we enjoyed his story, and that's the way we went on. The one thing I loved about school, and that was at the commencement of school, we had what we call a devotional hour. And we had this headmaster called Mr. Robertson. He looked like Napoleon. And he would get up and he would thump the desk because he knew that his boys of about 200 or more in front of him were mostly not very desirous of school. And he had a question whether we'd be any good for the next to take over when it came our turn to do things in the world. But I always enjoyed this time of devotion. We sang hymns. The old church hymns, and then he would give us a talk. He called it the devotional time. And on one occasion, he gave us a story. He gave us an interesting story about Churchill, Winston Churchill. He loved to quote Winston Churchill. You know, I think he at times thought he was Winston Churchill and tried to imitate his voice. You know, we shall not fail, and this kind of stuff. But he, the first boy, we thought it was great. But he reminded us at one time that Winston Churchill said in one of his famous speeches that when this war is finished, the future will belong to the youth. It will belong to the young people of this generation. And so I often thought about that, and he quoted other sections of Winston Churchill's speeches. But I often thought of that statement that he made, which came out of the speech from Winston Churchill. He says, the future belongs to the youth. And I heard that echo in many, many ecclesias that I attended when I listened to brethren like Brother A.D. Norris and Brother Whitaker. Brother Whitaker especially would hammer this saying to us that we young people who sit in his audience, who don't seem to be making any effort to listen to him, that the future will belong to us, that it is our responsibility to prepare ourselves for the time that we take it over. And he would encourage us, and he said, look, young brethren, he said, you are walking among giants. You are walking with men like A.D. Norris, John Carter, Harry Whittaker, and all those men who are giants of faith. And he said, what you should do, you should go and talk to them. You should go to them and question what they have said from the speaking desk. You should find company with them and learn from them and encourage us to read the pioneer works. Because one day, he said, it will be along to you. Now, the reason I mention this and appeal to the young people is, and to let them know that they're very fortunate today. Because in our youth, we had what we call the generation gap. And so the likes of myself and Alan Ormrod and others, we were almost afraid to approach these brethren because of this generation gap. We looked up to them with reverence and respect, but maybe too much on a higher plane. And we just couldn't jump that generation gap and mix with them comfortable. But the young people today, they don't have this hang-up. Young people today are more confident in themselves. And we know that they will go up to brethren and sisters and ask them certain questions and ask them to help them with their problems and their difficulties. So what we say to both the brethren and sisters, make yourself friendly with the young people. Go out of your way. If you see sometime, I see a young lady or a young boy standing on his own because he's a little shy of the crowd or nervous. They're the ones that we should seek out and give our time to and make them feel comfortable. We're building this bridge for that individual. And it's not easy. I found it very difficult in the ecclesias that I belong to as a young man to approach these people that I wanted to. I just wanted to talk to these people. But these brethren, they were so involved and busy, they just didn't seem to approach us or have time for us. So to the young and to the old, to the young, feel comfortable, go to your elder, ask questions. Remember, do we not, that when Jesus was coming from Jerusalem, they'd been up, as we know, with his parents, that he was lost. He was lost. And some of our young people are lost amongst the crowd. And Jesus was lost. And where did they find him? They found Jesus asking questions of the elders or of the fathers, as the scriptures tell us. Because he knew that they had this information. He knew that the things that were going on in the house of his father, and he queried it and would ask questions to learn from it. And young people are going to grow faster and stronger and more confident If they go to the elders, and you elders should be there with an open mind and time to spend with them. It has been said of old that one who stands on another's shoulders can see further than he. So remember that. One who stands on the shoulders of another one can see further than he. And this is the way we can help young people especially. And so during those years, my world and our world as young people was changing, and into the ecclesia now, our world was changing for good and for worse. But this headmaster, he was, as I say, enjoyed his talk, and he would prophesy. He was a religious man. He was a man who loved his Bible. He was a man who was a churchgoer. And he would use Scripture to give us lessons. And he would almost forecast or prophesy of changes that are coming upon the earth. And we as young people, and especially when later on we were baptizing, that we would have to contend with. And I remember on one occasion, he came in before us all and he says, "I want you boys to listen clearly and give me attention." And he waited until everybody was listening to him. And he said, "We have just received information from the British government that as of a certain day, Sunday, the day Sunday, will become an open day." He said, "They will allow sports on Sunday. The stores will all be open on Sunday. And sports activities will be carried out." And he said, "Boys, I want you to remember this day what I'm telling you." He said, "I'm telling you now and prophesy that this is the beginning of the end of the British Empire." And I remember that. And he said, "This is their attitude toward the people's attitude towards their God. They're closing the doors of their churches. They're opening the doors of movie places and the stores." And so he said, "This is the beginning of the end of the British Empire." So it would be a different world in which we move then. When we as young brethren, having been baptized, we would have to live with this world. We would see our world changing before, adrifting from attention to God, giving time to him, to the things of the world, man being involved in their own interests, desires, and the worship of the things of this life, rather God. And this is what we're called upon when baptized to contend with, to make sure that we don't become involved in it. And we've discovered now, having become a young brother, that now we were walking with different people and moving in a different direction from those of the world. Looking back on those days, I realize more fully how that it would seem that brethren and sisters were more dedicated in the sacrifice of many things for their love for God. It happens today in the ecclesia, I'm not saying that. But it seemed to be more pronounced and more difficult and a greater sacrifice in those days. I can remember having been baptized of many brethren and going to different ecclesias to speak of 10 or 15 miles distant, riding on a bicycle. They would ride on an old bicycle to different locations about 10 or 15 miles from their own ecclesia, riding there early in the morning, and then they at nighttime, the darkness, they would ride back. And I can tell you a few kind of interesting story regards to that. There's a brother Bernard, I think he came and spoke at the Bible school here, Bernard, and he was about 6'7", and he would cycle from Coventry to Rugby, which was a distance of about 12 miles, and he always made sure that when he got to our house, which was close to the ecclesia, that he would always make sure that he was there at 10 o'clock, and my mother would have eggs and bacon and fatty bread and all that kind of stuff ready for him. And he would have a big feed, go to the ecclesia. 11 o'clock he was there, standing up and preaching and teaching to the ecclesia his exhortation for the day. He had come to exhort and to lecture in this way. We have known of brothers and sisters. We have been a part of it. Brothers and sisters go into their Bible class. Some of us find it difficult to come to the Bible class because we have little other things that we are involved in, or we're too tired or too difficult. These brothers and sisters, when the war was on, most of them attended their Bible class. And there were incendiary bombs dropping on the roof. And yet the brothers and sisters thought that they had their place was to be with their God in his house, and God would take care of him. And this is the way it was. And so we saw many colorful, dedicated brethren that we grew up with. The sisters became likewise just as diligent in their stand for the truth. And we looked upon these sisters and the keeping of their house. They became full-time keepers of the home, caring for the less unfortunate neighbors. That is where the preaching is. We were talking with our Monday class study group, and they were talking about the Christadelphians and different churches, what they do. And one of the ladies gave a testimony to us as Christadelphians, and one of the pastors of her church has spoken more than once from his pulpit that the Christadelphians are the best examples that he knows of those who do this type of work, pastoral work. He said they are unbelievable because he has visited people in hospital, and he has seen Christadelphian go in there. He has seen Christadelphian visiting home, and he gave this testimony to us, so we should be commended for that. And this was during the war, and in my early days in the truth, the sisters did not have an easy time in more ways than one, because they didn't have all the fancy equipment that we got today now, like washing machines, dishwashers, and all those kind of things. They had the old scrubbing pot, and they had to hang their clothes out on the line and hope that it didn't rain and the wind would throw it down onto the lawn, and they would have to do it all over again. I've known a sister that have acted in this way, and have sisters who have taken in evacuees from other parts of the country. Because in London, there was the evacuation of children either to Australian places like that until those ships got blown up. And then they designed an arrangement where evacuees would come out of London and they would be adopted by people in the less dangerous area in which we were in, as they thought, and they would take them. I know of a sister who had five evacuees from London, Jewish boys. Their parents sent them down, and she took care of them, plus myself and others who would go and live on the farm during our time of holidays. We also remember very well. In our ecclesia, we had brothers and sisters who were very wealthy. We had brothers and sisters who lived in big homes. But I remember well that we had this problem as young brethren. The lecture would finish at 7:30 or sometimes 7 o'clock, and we had this free time. There was a temptation to go to the movies because the movies were open then and you could go to them until 9 o'clock at night. There was a temptation, which some fell into it and went to these movies. But there were those who were concerned about our welfare. There was a brother and sister, Clark. They had nothing. And I say nothing. They had a very humble home. He didn't have a high-paying job. They often, because of food rations and everything, could not very often furnish their table. But they saw the plight, and this is where we come of the relationship of elders and young people and taking care of our young people. They saw it to it that the likes of myself, Alan Ormrod, and many other young brethren would not be tempted to go uptown and go to the movies. They said, after the lecture, you come to our house. And we would go to their house, and they had an old piano that I think most of the notes were off key. But we would sit around that piano for an hour or more singing hymns, and then she would provide us what she had. A cup of tea, white bread, and a piece of cheese stuck on the top of it. But we appreciated that so much, and we always looked to that as a living example of those who serve their Father in heaven well. I said that at 8:30 I would pause for questions, because if anybody has any questions or queries on what I've said so far, now is the opportunity to put your hand up or shout out and ask me, and see if you if there's any little thing that you want to know as far as we got. I have another week to do this, and looking at my material I had, when you're talking about 65 years, as you well know, that could take a long time to cover, but I'm just trying to hit the highlights of that time. So if anybody has a question, now is the opportunity to speak out.
Were you two done for conscription?
Yeah, we'll get into that in about 15 minutes time or next week. Yeah, that is the point, because during the war I was in 42, I was reaching the age of 18, and I did receive a military call-up, which is kind of a story in itself, because young people haven't done this. The young people of our ecclesia have never experienced this. And this is where you should be prepared for it. And this preparation for going before a tribunal, as I'll show you later on, does not come altogether from being smart with scripture verses. This is what I want you to emphasize. Because when I stood before the tribunal, I knew very little about my defense as a conscience objector. And I had to stand before six judges, one main judge, and I was about the fourth one to go in to be confronted before the judge. And what he did with some of the young men before me, I tell you, was not pleasant. The one just before me, which we'll remind you later on, the one before me was the Plymouth brother. A young guy like myself, just as nervous as myself. And the judge called him forward and he says, okay, young man, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a butcher. Oh, you're a butcher, are you? Oh, and what if a German came into your house and he attacked your mother? What would you do? Well, the young man didn't know, he said. And he just couldn't do it. So the judge said, well, you don't mind killing little animals and all that. Would you kill the German? And the young fellow just broke down in pieces. And the judge said, down the coal mines for the rest of the war. Well, I have a bit of a phobia when it comes to close quarters. And I thought, if he sends me down the coal mines, I may volunteer for front line out in France because I have this strange thing about closing areas. But anyhow, I'll tell you the rest of the story later on that. But it is interesting. And what I was saying, that what I was trying to emphasize was, and it applied to my life, was that is to become close to brothers and sisters that you can trust and have confidence in, but more so, never give up in prayer. As a young boy, I had a testimony to the power of prayer. My parents would all kneel by their bed at night time and pray and pray. My father, when he got up for work, whether it was 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, I would go to his room and he would be there on his knees. And that impressed me, that this man, so strong, would get down on his knees before he started work and pray to his God. So all through my life and the preparation and the part of this experience of standing, it was through not my strength, but the help and strength that I gained from God through prayer. I was constantly not a student of the Bible, by a long, long way, ill-equipped to be in that position. But I had prayer, my faith and trust was in God through the power of prayer. And I could never believe it to this day that I'm like a lot of brethren, a bit nervous when you're standing before a crowd, a bit nervous when you go into a crowd. But when I went to there, I was not a little bit nervous. And I couldn't understand that. I could not understand it because when I gave little talks at youth groups in England, I was a very nervous brother. And yet, when I stood before that judge or six judges, it didn't bother me. I just stood there as if they couldn't touch me. And that's the way it was. So it's the power of prayer. So with young people, this is what you have to be educated in and trained in, is the power of prayer. Constantly prayer, praying to God to see you through every movement of your life in this way. So this is the so this is the way it went on. And any other questions? We have 5 minutes, and then we'll sit down, and we'll continue, as we say, if it is the Lord's will, next Thursday, with the rest of the story, with the rest of an observation of my life. And as I say, I'm not doing this to show to you that I'm any greater than any of you sitting there, because all I'm doing is to hope that in some small way you can see my errors, see my strength, and gain from it. And this way. Pardon? I was afraid, Brother Omar, but I mean, Brother Colin would ask. You always know where your friends are when you need them, don't you? So what, Brother, we began to touch on that a little bit, and that was that later on, after the war was over, the brethren saw that we were in need of training, spiritual exercise, and so they arranged these youth groups, youth weekends, study weekends, on all this kind of stuff. What Brother Clover, thank you very much, is referring to is that we had a youth gathering called the Swanwick Gathering. Now, I was a very rebellious young brother. I've changed a lot over the years. But I was a very rebellious young brother at the age of 17 and 18. Full of life, not too much up here, but full of life. And so anyhow, the brethren and sisters arranged this weekend called Swanwick Weekend. What it was the... It was the home, the original mansion, the Singer Sewing Machine family. And when they died, they gave it over to a society for the benefit of young people. And we would go there every weekend, and we loved it. Twice a year, we went to this gathering. And one of the elders of my ecclesia spoke to another elder, and he said, "I don't like these gatherings, youth gatherings." So he said, "Why not, brother?" He said, "Well, it's nothing but a place for young brothers and sisters to meet each other." So the reply to him was, "Well, if young men and young girls have got to meet each other, that's the best place for them to go to, is to in with a youth group and where they're studying the Bible." And this is, as we say, will be an appeal later on to our young brothers and sisters, is go to these youth groups. Mix with these of light, precious faith, and be affected by the advice of one of our youth leaders that if you are going to choose a wife or a girlfriend or boyfriend, choose it from the Lord. Let the Lord make arrangements for this relationship. Anyhow, getting back to Swanwick, we would go there, 300 or 400 young brethren and sisters, and... We had certain rules and regulations, and the brother Shepherd, Harry Shepherd, not many, maybe Peggy, no, you don't know? Maybe Peggy knows him. Brother Harry Shepherd was the leader, the coordinator, and he was the big boss over this group. And anyhow, we had more, as I say, more energy than brains, and so curfew was 9 o'clock. We lived in dormitories. So it was decided by a group of us from Leicester and Rugby and from London that we were hungry. So we decided that at 9 o'clock we weren't going to go to bed. We were going down to the village and get some fish and chips. And so we got in touch with a brother from London, two brethren from London who had more money than I did, and they had English cars, the Singer cars, with the rooftop. And we went hurtling down into this village, spent half an hour looking for a fish and chip shop to be open, and couldn't find one. So we decided that we better go back before we got caught. Prior to going down there, some of us had seen some of these movies of prisoners escaping from jail and that. So we took our pillows, bundled them up, put our pajamas to the head, covered them up, and when the wardens came through, they went 2, 3, they counted, we were all in place. So there was Brother MacPherson cuddled up in his bed there, and I there, and we'd all gone out through the window, gone into the car, and gone down into the Swanwick area looking for fish and chips. Anyway, it was time to come back, so we had the rooftop sunroofs open, and we were all in a jolly good mood, singing hymns and everything else. Going up the driveway up to the mansion, we all decided that we would sing Psalm 23, Loving Shepherd. So we all going up singing Loving Shepherd as loud as we could. Suddenly all the lights came on in front of the mansion. Here was Brother Shepherd standing there waiting for us, and we're plus a few, half a dozen other wardens. So he says, "Okay, you boys, we'll all come and come before the committee tomorrow morning for to be reprimanded." So at 8 o'clock we all went before the committee, and we got a blessing that any more trouble like that, we would never be allowed to go to another youth group in England. We were classed as black sheep. So anyhow, just to further the embarrassment, it was a Sunday morning, and we had the breaking of bread at the front like this, and Brother Shepherd was there, and he says, "Right, we need service for the bread and wine." And Brother MacPherson, Brother Ormrod, and all those who had gone out the night before were appointed to serve the bread and wine. So you may have seen my red face on that occasion, but we walked down the middle with the bread and wine, looking very embarrassed, and all the girls going, "They're the black sheep of the gathering." And in his announcement, he announced that we're sad to say that in our group we have a bunch of black sheep amongst us, and they will have to be removed. So anyhow, we went and cried to Brother Shepherd, and he said, "Okay, we'll let you off this time." And so we continued to go to the youth groups, and we changed somewhat, as you can see today, that I'm not that way inclined. Anyway, I see the time has gone, and if there's no other questions, we will move on next week, because I'd like to get more into it next week. I will tell you about having to make a stand as a conscience objector, and other things that that in my life towards the end that may be of interest to you, how that there was a revival of preaching. We were, maybe I shouldn't get onto it. I'll tell you, continue next week if it's the Lord's will.